Support for GLT's Grow comes from Chris Holderly at Advantage Lawn and Landscape, offering customized services for commercial and residential landscaping and property design, including staging for long-term growth during all seasons. Proud to serve Central Illinois. Details at growingadvantage.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Just about everything you can do with a gasoline-powered tool in the garden can be handled by a quieter, cleaner, battery-powered electric tool. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert Patrick Murphy from Illinois State University's School of Biological Sciences and the curator of the Fell Arboretum. Murph, thanks for coming by.
Mike, nice to see you.
On today's Grow, we're talking gadgets, specifically electric gadgets, no cords. I've cut through my share of cords. Have you cut through cords before with like hedge trimmers?
I have. I've done it in the house and outside the house. And
it startles me every time. They're always plugged into a GFI outlet, so nobody gets hurt, but it's like, bzzz.
I know, and that's always a frightening occurrence to encounter that and to discover that you've made that accident.
No cords with these devices, though, that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
and you touched on a couple of the biggest selling points, and that is the emissions. There's virtually none. And if you've ever worked in a commercial groundskeeping kind of setting, or you have a large piece of property and you've been operating a string trimmer for a while, it's like holding a toaster oven under your arm after a while.
And you have the exhaust.
Yeah, exactly. That too. And Mike, you have the vibration, the intense vibration of hanging on to a string trimmer that's maybe old or out of balance. It's a trifecta of misery.
So do these work in a commercial application, or are we really talking about, you know, home landscaping?
I think that there are some applications that are commercially friendly, and I think about my travels in the Southeast, and I've actually seen tool rigs, that's the big trailer that they pull behind the vehicle, with solar panels on them. And I thought, well, what's the solar panel for? Well, the solar panel was for a computer that helped the crew stay on their route, and it also kept the owner of that vehicle and trailer aware of where they were at all times. Now, that's an excellent gadget.
Sure.
No stopping for a two-hour lunch at Casey's or whatever. And another thing that's really big in the Southeast and other parts of the country where the landscaping happens 12 months of the year, it's best to do that work early in the morning. A lot of times those guys are driving down the road at dark 30 and they're folding stuff up a little bit after lunch. And then that vehicle can sit there and charge a solar panel and it sells. I know that DeWalt has a kit that includes a multi-tool exchange that's all fueled by one battery. And I have a string trimmer out of that complement, and not having to breathe the exhaust, like you said, is just enormous benefit.
And I have the Ryobi set, which,
great product.
So it's all one battery, and it works across all of their tools. So I have the leaf blower, the string trimmer, the hedge shears, and a 10-inch chainsaw, which is great for small jobs
right
around the house. You're not going to be able to cut down a big tree with this thing or do firewood or anything, but it does get the job done.
Right. You might not be able to make a living with it, but you can take care of your own property, and they're quite affordable. And then I think about the options if you have, say, a large home, or if you had a home with detached areas. So if you had like a boat dock, or you had a little shed where you kept your golf cart and your golf clubs, this battery-powered stuff is fantastic because you could actually have more than one set. I think that that's a great benefit of the affordability and renewability of that battery-powered equipment.
And we're talking about everything from hand shears, as I mentioned, to chainsaws, even lawnmowers, but some of those batteries aren't interchangeable or work across all platforms. They're more like what you might get in a car.
Right. But I think that because there's changes in how we approach our lawns, I think lawns are going to get smaller because we have to conserve water, and that battery-powered lawnmower is probably going to make a couple of evolutions, and then they'll meet in the middle at a perfect spot, hopefully.
So there are some trade-offs here. What are the benefits, do you think, of going all battery-powered?
The first one that I think of is kind of a toss-up between the limited stress on yourself and the limited stress on the environment. The quiet one, I think your neighbors are going to love you for that too. If you're the eager beaver that's getting started at 7:30 or 8 on a Saturday, they're very quiet too. So all of those things make for a more harmonious presence while we're outside working in our gardens and everything.
So the downside of going all electric with batteries has to be the battery.
And your ability to charge it between uses. So that's kind of why I'm of the opinion that you might struggle making a living with it if it's something you needed to use day after day. But I have never had a problem with my keeping my stuff charged up, and that could just be attention to detail. But I've also, like you, I've used mine to the end of its life. So even the vacuum cleaner that we have in the house is a battery-powered vacuum, and it acts the same way. It just uses its battery up, and then it's done.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of these new batteries is that there's not this slow decline in power. These lithium-ion batteries sort of work at full power until they don't have any more to give, and then the device just stops working.
And there's plenty of people that, for whatever reason, preference and taste issue, they might not want to mow during the heat of the day. Let it charge back up during the heat of the day, and if you didn't finish your project, maybe you could knock it out there at sundown.
So another downside are the batteries themselves. At some point, the tool may actually outlive the life of the battery. What do you do with the battery? I assume you can recycle them.
Well, here in Bloomington Normal, they have hazardous disposal opportunities during the year, and I believe that they're managed through the Ecology Action Center here in Bloomington Normal. But I know lots of communities have these opportunities to dispose of hazardous waste, not just our old batteries, and all kinds of batteries, not just the big batteries that fit into the power tools we're talking about, but the ones that are in the flashlight, the ones that are in the remote, as well as any unused Roundup. You want to get rid of that. Unused paint, all that stuff goes to the same spot. The same people help manage its disposal.
And then you could also call the local battery shops that they might take some of the recycled batteries as well.
Yeah, and I think that that's an industry that's going to evolve also, because I've met people in my life that started businesses collecting rare minerals and circuit boards out of old electronics. A lot of the components that make up the batteries are reusable, but I just think that that's a capitalist opportunity.
Yeah, that's not a do-it-yourselfer thing,
absolutely,
though, because some of those
not.
Chemicals and breaking into some of those batteries can be hazardous.
Yeah.
Is it helpful to store the batteries inside instead of a sub-freezing garden shed all winter?
Absolutely. My understanding, too, is it's not good to leave those or any other battery laying on bare concrete. So if you had a station in the house where you had like a toolbox or something, if it's a metal toolbox and it rests on the floor with that battery in there, you could conduct through the contact. The way to get around that is have a wood or a piece of carpet or a piece of rubber or something like that at the bottom where that battery is going to rest. And it's always best to not only to avoid letting them get freezing cold, but you don't want them to get smoking hot either.
So is there an upper, if it's 110 degrees outside, there are going to be very few people actually using a string trimmer, I would hope.
Yeah, but I think of how easily it could happen, right? So say I'm coming over to your house to help do some little garden party in preparation for some entertaining you're doing, and we get sidetracked and that string trimmer's in the back of my pickup truck cooking in the sun. What you might find is that it just doesn't work while it's very hot. And once it resumes normal temperature and the battery stabilizes, it might work again.
Just like my iPhone.
Yeah, it is like that,
yeah,
too.
It'll shut down for a while until it cools off.
And, I overlooked another detail related to your question about, what are some of the cons? One of the cons is, say, with the lawnmower, you're getting a 20 or 22-inch cut out of that gas-powered, out of the battery-powered mower. You're getting that large of a cut or larger with the fuel-powered mower. So you might have to take smaller bites, but I think that homes and yards and everything are kind of shrinking at some level, so I think that there's a good meeting in the middle there, too.
And less maintenance?
Less maintenance, for sure.
That doesn't mean no maintenance, but you don't have a gasoline-powered engine to maintain.
That's right, and you don't have filters to change, oil to change, and when it comes to your battery-powered stuff, you can use the blower before the battery runs out to clean off all the other tools.
If you have any questions about tools or anything in the garden, you can submit them at wglt.org/grow. Next week, we'll talk about irrigation, specifically lightweight irrigation kits. Do-it-yourself kits, Murph, is that what we're talking about?
They are, yes.
All right, that's Patrick Murphy. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your gardening questions to wglt.org/grow.